are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
It goes quiet when Chuck is done talking, doesn't it? It just goes pure quiet. It's peaceful.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I just pictured you at the end being like Forrest Gump, and that's all I have to say about that.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
What is the most interesting thing about Brett Gardner to you?
His name is Brett.
Okay, how about in a baseball sense? And don't say his socks, please.
His socks, please.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome into the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I am your host, Ben Brents. I'm joined by Evan Peterson. How are you doing tonight, Evan?
Doing fantastic. We got the band back together, talking some baseball. How you been, Ben?
Been good. I haven't talked to you in a week. It was a very nice week, if you ask me.
That's all right. I cried a little bit. I'm just happy to know that that Chuck is still here with us and didn't get swept away on the major flood.
Speaking of which, how are you doing, Chuck?
I am fine. I can be reached at just chucking it on Twitter, and I'm the reason you guys didn't get a show last week, so send all the hate mail towards me. I was expecting to see Noah and the boat float by my front door, which is right next to the bar restaurant I own, and somehow or another, we managed to not sustain any serious damage while the rest of the city was in turmoil. So, hey, better off lucky than good sometimes. But we're back, and I will make up for lost time, I promise.
Well, that's good. Evan, where can you be reached at Twitter?
At EvFWFB. Kind of have a love-hate relationship with Twitter ever since Freddie Freeman went on the disabled list. So has my Twitter. So I have been thinking about revving it back up for the football season. Just wait until I get drunk on Sundays and yell at my TV. And then it'll be a good time for everybody.
I can be reached at BBrennisFWFB. Guys, why don't we jump right in and we're going to do some player debates. Evan, why don't you tell me what you think of George Springer versus Cody Bellinger for the rest of the season and next?
Man, I could not have expected Cody Bellinger to be this good. Like, I am a Springer guy. It's one of the things that I've gotten kind of like Werner's given me a little bit of crap for, and a couple other guys have. And it's kind of been my heel in some of my recent trading because I value him so high. But Bellinger has came on like absolute gangbusters. I don't know if there's going to be an adjustment as he, you know, kind of goes through the second time around. I think the one, if you're, you know, talking overall value, is Springer hitting on top of an AL lineup that has probably better hitters overall, as opposed to Bellinger being in the NL with the pitcher spot and everything like that. So I think Springer has the better value of the two, but having this conversation with Bellinger is a very interesting thing because I think he definitely deserves it, and he's a guy I'm very interested in going forward.
Well, let me ask you a question. Does what Bellinger, what he's done at this point, do you think it's something that's repeatable going forward? Because at this point, he has the same amount of home runs and basically the same amount of RBIs as Springer and about 70 less at-bats. So do you think that this type of pace is something that Bellinger is able to keep up for at least the next year and a half?
Or yeah. That was kind of like a, you know, side, like, yeah. It was funny because when I went to look at him on the Fangraphs leaderboards, I sorted by home runs and his name was nowhere to be found because he doesn't have enough at-bats to qualify or plate appearances, whatever they go by. He was at 210. He's about 50 plate appearances behind pretty much everybody else who's in that range. As far as it being repeatable and him being a 40 home run guy, I mean, I think that's a little lofty, and I think you know, would have to gamble on the side of regression and say under, but I do think he's a phenomenal talent, and I think, you know, 33 would be a fantastic over-under for the end of the season if you guys wanted to play along.
Chuck, where would you go in an undead over under?
I think you'd have to take the over right now. I think the questions about Bellinger are going to be batting average and stolen bases. Where, you know, the odd thing about doing this, I mean, I do think those are the questions about Bellinger, but stolen bases seems to be quite the question mark now with Springer as well, since he's, you know, has not been stealing at a rate that we really thought he was going to. It's odd in that perspective, but I would take the over on 33 home runs, and that's partially saying that the environment's going to be close to what it is this year. I would predict him for at least 35 or 36 home runs next year. At this point, he certainly seems to be very, very, very adept at hitting the ball out of the yard. I think some of the other categories are the question marks around Bellinger.
I would say it's a good over-under. I would say it's probably 30 on the dot that I think he hits next year. This year, I think he could surpass that if he keeps up his current pace. Just because of the type of swing that he has, it's kind of it's a more all-for-nothing type swing, but he still knows how to put the ball in play, which is good. But it is surprising that he has more steals than Springer, when you would have thought that Springer would have been the person who would have had more steals, but he's just been so inefficient over the last few years in terms of stolen bases that he's just, it doesn't make sense. And when he's on base, because of all the hitters that are so good behind him, it doesn't even make sense for him to try to get an out because they're all so good that he's just going to keep scoring a ton of runs. And he's hitting at a .282 clip right now, which is nice. But I do think that Bellinger does bring a lot to the table considering what he's done at this point this year. But I still think I'd have to lean Springer for the overall stats and the fact that he'll get a lot more plate appearances because he's leading off.
I just wanted to throw in a quick thought. Which number do you think normalizes for the respective player first? Do you think we see Springer's walk rate go up, or do you think we see Bellinger's strikeout percentage get worse?
That's a difficult one. I don't get the feel that Springer is going to get more patient at the plate. He just seems really amped up. I think he will eventually, like 2 or 3 years from now. So I will go with the second one. I just also wanted to mention that not only do I think that it's more likely that Bellinger's strikeout rate comes up, but I also think it's more likely that that his BABIP comes up. He's got a .283 BABIP, and he hasn't had that low of a BABIP since rookie ball in 2014. So and he hits the ball so hard that I actually think he's getting a little unlucky, and that's adding to his .261 batting average. But to answer your question, that's what I think. I think Bellinger's he's got a 30% strikeout rate and a 10% walk rate right now. So that's what I'm seeing for Bellinger. And I don't know. It's hard for me to say that I don't think Bellinger is going to get a whole lot worse than that in the strikeout rate. Do you?
I personally think that Bellinger could get a little worse just by the quality of pitchers that he'll go up against here that are different than AAA. And I just think that if teams are able to kind of figure out where his weaknesses are, then they may be able to attack him in those spots as the year goes on and as we come into next year. And we have to see him make the adjustments. And we're getting to the point of the season where a team will be able to have an idea of what to do against him when they're going into a year or going into a series. And I think because of that, he's going to have to work on adapting. And the fact that we're coming up closer to the All-Star break, basically, the closer we get there, the more time the teams are going to be able to have film sessions and look things over and have enough time to go over what he is good at, what he isn't. And we want to see him make the changes that Jock Peterson didn't make. We want to see him make changes that other players that need more time. We want to see him make those changes at a quicker pace because it's like Chuck said, he may be getting a bit unlucky with that BABIP. If he's able to bring it up, he could end up having more overall in terms of counting stats, even though he'll have significantly less at-bats.
And I think it's interesting to project where you think his strikeout rate is going to go, because when you look at his minor league track record, we've never really seen him repeat a level of any significance since, you know, low rookie ball back in 2013, 2014. He's just gradually progressed because he's had, you know, prodigious power and whatnot. But I just wanted to throw that out there because I do think how he's going to adjust is the biggest thing going forward, at least for these two.
Did you have anything else to add on this player debate, Chuck?
No, I think I would still take Springer, but I think the longer that Bellinger plays like this, the closer it's going to get. I don't doubt that for a second, and I don't think I would blame anybody for taking Bellinger over Springer.
All right, well, why don't we move into some players that haven't got off to great starts this year, and we're going to be talking a little bit about what you think of Rick Porcello and Aaron Nola going forward for this year and next. Obviously, they haven't had great seasons, but we all think that there's the potential that they could do better. I know we're not overly high on them, but there will be teams that are looking to try to potentially get a buy low next year. So what are your thoughts on these players, Chuck?
Well, it's curious because Aaron Nola appears to be the guy that everyone seems to fall in love with his peripherals, but he hasn't really done it yet either. You know, last year was kind of injury shortened, and this year is, you know, his FIP is a lot better than his ERA, you know, basically a run better, but he really hasn't shined either. And I have a hard time because I don't really believe that the Phillies are, you know, just a year or two away. They seem to be regressing pretty quickly to me. And so to me, you know, I would rather take the gamble on Porcello and hope that I get at least in between the start of this year and what last year was, than, you know, hope for everything to come together for Nola. But I think Evan's going to disagree with me. Evan, who do you like better? You like Nola better, or would you rather go with Porcello?
Well, I'm biased because I think, you know, if you've heard me talk at any point in time, I've been pro Nola, and you probably haven't heard me talk a bunch about Porcello because I really don't have a lot to say. And I think that when you look at Porcello's profile and how it's kind of been evolving, where, you know, he's not putting as many balls on the ground, he's getting absolutely waxed with a 43%, you know, hard contact. His career average is 28%. So obviously that's not something that you want to see. But Aaron Nola, I mean, he's straining more runners on base. There are home run issues for both. I think Nola's is a little more controllable, and like I said, part of that may be bias driven. But if I'm picking one going forward, I know Porcello has a Cy Young in his trophy case, but it's not enough to make me want to roster him on my team at all.
For me, this is tough because I thought that Aaron Nola would have progressed a little more this year, but it seems that all the Phillies have regressed, which is kind of a shame because I did think that the offense could be decent, to say the least, and that some of the pitchers would have taken another potential small step forward. And even the minor league players, you know, look at J.P. Crawford. He hasn't really been able to do anything this year. You know, Hoskins at least has performed well, but, you know, he had players like Odubel Herrera, who people thought would be good coming into year, hasn't done much. Cesar Hernandez started off hot and has gone super cold. So I would like to say Aaron Nola, but I do think that it has to be Porcello. I think that this year is more bad luck than anything. I think he's giving up way too many hits. And that's an understatement at this point. But his whip is so incredibly high that it's got to come down. And next year, I think he would just be a really good buy low player. He's got a good defense behind him. If you're playing in the Wins League, the fact that he plays for Boston helps. And I just think that he's better than what he's shown so far.
Sorry, I was looking at Rick Porcello's hits. He's actually the number one overall in the majors with 124 hits given up. Second is Kevin Gausman with 107. So,
I'm sure you have his BABIP in front of you. What is that number?
Currently sitting at a 366, and he's, like I said, part of that probably is due to the hard contact rate, I think.
Yeah, so I would think that he's getting more unlucky than anything, and he's the type of guy who will have to make changes, and if he doesn't, then, yeah, he's not going to make the improvements, but I think he's the type of guy that, you know, last year was probably the max he's ever going to have. It's going to be his ceiling, and this probably will be, you know, the worst he's going to be, so it's going to be somewhere in between, and I would venture to say it's probably on the better side than the worst side, and I think that he's capable of making the improvements. Maybe not necessarily for the back half of this year, unless he, you know, maybe misses a start, gets something pushed back so he can work on his mechanics. Maybe the All-Star break will help with that, but I think that we're looking at more of a next year improvement than a this year improvement. Chuck, any further thoughts?
No, I just think they're going to get taken at a point in the draft where you're going to want upside, and you're going to realize that these players might be interchangeable. They might end up on the waiver wire, or they might end up somebody that you're streaming or only using when they're doing well. And in that case, I have a tendency to go with the Red Sox over the Philly, because I'm just we haven't seen it from the Philly in this case. And the Red Sox have the capabilities of being a really good team. And I think the Phillies are quite a ways away from that.
All right, guys, why don't we move into next player debate? And that's going to be talking about Travis Shaw and Mark Reynolds. So what are your thoughts on these two players, because they both had pretty good seasons, and given the fact that both of those teams have a ton of bats that can play at a lot of different positions, we weren't exactly sure as to what the playing situation would be for both of these guys, but they've carved out quite a good spot for themselves to be able to stay in the lineup every single day. So, Evan, what are your thoughts on these guys?
Yeah, absolutely, and especially, you know, Reynolds with the whole Desmond coming back, and that kind of helped him establish that playing time up front. As far as going forward, I'm probably going to take Shaw. I'm kind of pissed at myself that I was as low on him as I was coming into the year, because he's been so great. And I think it's kind of one of those things that, you know, Reynolds is a, you know, decent power play even outside of Coors Field. But if you're going to give me somebody that kind of has part of their value hinging on a certain variable, which is good to have, and it's not anything that, you know, you can really take away from him unless he gets traded. But I think I would just rather take the overall, you know, I think Shaw is a little more of a well-rounded player. So I'd probably go that route.
And what about you, Chuck? What are your thoughts?
Well, obviously, I've got to see a lot of Shaw this season, and he doesn't seem like a player who's going to fall off a cliff like he did last year in Boston. But there was sort of always a Pablo Sandoval looking over his shoulder kind of thing going on last year. And despite the fact that Shaw doesn't seem very fast on the bases, he gets a couple of stray stolen bases because the Brewers are just running all the time. And I also think that, you know, since he was like a spring training invite this year, I think Mark Reynolds will be a free agent next year. And so obviously he would lose a lot of his value to me if he wasn't in Colorado. And if he does stay in Colorado, we'll have the exact same questions that we had last year. I think Shaw has carved out a permanent role for like the next year and a half at least in Milwaukee. I think that Mark Reynolds will have the exact same questions. I mean, Raimel Tapia and, you know, David Dahl aren't even really in the picture completely yet, but they'll need to be by next year. And you'll still have Parra, and you'll still have the same logjam that the Rockies management has managed to create over recent years. So although I really love the story about Mark Reynolds, and, you know, the better he plays the rest of this year, the more likely it is that he gets an actual contract next year. And if he gets an actual contract, I can't see it being with the Rockies. So that's why I lean Shaw.
How much do you expect Mark Rendell's stats to drop if he did leave Colorado?
15 to 20%
In all categories, you think?
Well, yeah, probably.
I mean, the only reason I ask is because the thing that we've seen the most that have affected the players the most that have gone to Colorado is their BABIP, and it helps their average because of it. And while, yes, there is a power increase, it seemed to have become going from more of a top-tier power place to more closer towards neutral rather than staying as that very, very top-tier with all the other parks that have been making home run havens, you could say. But I think that his stats may not necessarily drop off a ton. We've been seeing these improvements that he's been making with his strikeout rate and his walk rate over the last few years. And I know that Justin Mason has talked about his improvements in those specific areas over a couple other podcasts. But I do think that if I was going to be picking a player, I'd go with a younger player who could potentially have more overall upside than Travis Shaw. He does bring a little stolen base prowess, which is nice. I think he still has very similar power output, and I think that he, with a couple of slight improvements, could become closer to a 290-300 hitter. So I think that that would be my pick.
Well, yeah, he's a 300 hitter when he's hitting at home. He's a 260 hitter on the road over the past 2 years. So, like I said, it's one of those things where you have this variable, but he's just – and he's a decent power play, but what is it, 12 of his home runs have come at Coors this year? I don't know.
You mean – we're talking about Shaw.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Reynolds. No, well, never mind. Just scratch everything that I just said.
I'm going to keep it in.
No.
Anthony Rendon just got a neck injury. Shit. That's annoying.
Well, now we definitely have to cut it, so.
Yeah. Cool. Chuck or Evan, did either of you have any other... I should rephrase it. Evan, did you have anything else to add on either of these players?
No, I did not. Thank you for asking.
Oh, you're so never helpful. How come when I ask Chuck is always like, no, and then he gives a point? How come you can never give me a fucking point, Evan? How come you can never do it?
Why does Chuck feel the need to tell you no when he should just say, yeah, have something else to say?
I always wondered.
Have you ever thought about that?
I did. I always wondered that, actually.
Well, now you have your answer. Ben, do you have anything else to say? Let me flip the script on you.
No, I'm good, but thanks.
All right. Would you like to introduce the next point, or would you like me to?
No. Why don't we talk about our last player debate, and that would be Christian Yelich and Andrew Benintendi. Chuck, who are you picking going forward? And is there anything, any real difference between these two players in what their skill set that they're bringing to the fantasy realm is?
You know, I see the players as relatively similar. The only difference that I see here is that Yelich has been around for a few years. He plays in a much worse run environment as far as being able to possibly have a really good home run year. And I don't really believe in the Marlins' offensive depth. They haven't proven to be consistent. They always seem like a Giancarlo Stanton injury away from being a very mediocre offense. So I'm going to go with the Red Sox and the younger player here. I know that, I believe in both of them for batting average. I believe both of them for at least moderate power. I think Benintendi probably is going to, has a decent chance to outrun Yelich going forward, although neither one of them are a detriment in that category either. But I'm going to take the Red Sox and the American League offensive player over Yelich, even though I like both players quite a bit.
I mean, I personally think it's kind of surprising because Yelich has two less home runs with 10 more at-bats on the season, but he's got 8 more runs, he's got 5 less RBIs, and he's got 1 less steal. And he's got 5 points higher in batting average. So they're very, very similar players, and they bring very similar skill sets to the table. So it's a little surprising that where you saw Yelich getting drafted compared to where Benintendi was getting drafted. Now, obviously, we didn't know exactly what Benintendi would do, but do you expect a huge difference between these two players going into next year's draft, Evan, in the ADP?
I mean, I think it's going to normalize out a lot more. Like, I had a buddy in a league where it's 12 teams, five keepers, and he hung on to Benintendi, and I was kind of giving him some shit for it on draft day. And right now, Benintendi is a, you know, the 84th overall player, 29th outfielder, and there could be, you know, maybe a little bit of room for growth. I really like what I've seen from him at the plate this year. So maybe it's not as egregious as I thought it was. I think it's funny that you mentioned, you know, Yelich is behind him in home runs, which I think most of us probably would have expected. But I think there's actually some growth that you could expect from Christian Yelich here. If you break down his balls that aren't hit on the ground, his hard hit percentage is 10% below his career average of 55%, and he's hitting more fly balls, which was kind of the knock on him. You know, everybody was like, he could never hit 20 home runs with his ground ball rate being what it is. But as you see it start to climb up, and if the hard hit rate normalizes there, I do think, you know, another 20 home run season. And I think it's interesting you also mentioned the steals, because I think if you look at minors numbers, people probably would have expected Yelich to be a bigger benefit to your steals category. But I think Benintendi is probably going to outrun him this year, don't you think, Ben?
It seems so. It seems that Benintendi has the green light for now, and there's nothing for me to think that he's just going to stop being able to produce in the stolen base category. I think it's going to be close. I think that where they finish on the year is going to be very similar in terms of overall stats, which anyone who would have had Andrew Benintendi would have clearly had a significant amount of more value, given the fact that it's probably about 60 to 70 different spots in ADP. And as much as I like Yelich, I think I'd rather take the upside and the youth in Benintendi. Even though Yelich himself is still young, I still think that if Benintendi is putting up similar, if not better, stats to what Yelich is already putting up, why wouldn't we think that with more time in the majors that he'll make significant improvements and be better in all of the categories? So that's my thinking behind it. Chuck, did you have any other things that you want to add on these players?
Yes, I do. No, I just really want to add, I want to agree with you guys that if the players are similar, as a generality, I always want to go with the younger player and the American League player when it comes to offense.
Even though you think the Red Sox are overrated as an offense?
I do, but I don't really think it's Benintendi's fault.
Well, no.
I think Betts has been pretty underwhelming. Hanley Ramirez has been pretty underwhelming. You know, their catchers haven't been very good. I guess that wasn't really expected. But, you know, Jackie Bradley Jr., you know, has a home run tonight, but he hasn't really done a whole lot. So I think the loss of David Ortiz has hurt that offense more than people maybe even suspected it might. And I think Mookie Betts has got to finish strong, or he's one of the guys that has a tendency, to me, to fall quite a bit within next year's first round. So, but Benintendi, I think, is going in the right direction. I think he's been better than people, better than a lot of pundits thought he would be so far. And I think his hit tool will carry him.
No argument there. I just kind of wanted to poke the bear. And speaking of poking the bear, Ben, we weren't going to talk Dexter Fowler versus Lorenzo Cain. Like, you were just going to throw everything that I brought to the table under the bus? Or is it just because you think it's so obviously Cain because of the speed?
I don't know who either of those players are, unfortunately, so I'm sorry I can't assist you.
Well, Dexter Fowler has been knocking the snot out of the ball since he was moved to the second spot in the Cardinals lineup, and Lorenzo Cain hit like 8 home runs in a week, and some dude was trying to rub it in my face that he was so much better than me, because Cain's had months like this where he broke out. I want to say last year he had a month where he hit like, you know, 7 or 9 home runs, somewhere in that range. So we see this, but I don't think anybody's expecting it to last. But both are on amazing power binges for them right now.
I mean, for me, I think for the fact that the stolen bases is so significantly in Kane's favor at this current point, it has to be him. Because you're basically going to get everything else that you're getting with Fowler with Kane. And I think that Kane's a better overall outfielder. I think we saw that a few years ago. And obviously the Royals have got worse in overall value. But I think that Dexter Fowler, while he's done well and he's homered in four straight games and five of the last seven, I think that we'll actually still see more overall output coming from Lorenzo Cain. And if he does get moved, I can only see putting him in a much better spot. Now, he may not be in as great of a lineup spot with the new team, depending on where he does go exactly. But I think that what Cain brings to the table with his skill set, as long as he stays healthy, I think he's going to be more beneficial than Dexter Fowler. Chuck? Agreed, Chuck.
I would. I like Fowler more as a player overall, but I do think that Fowler is further hurt. Not only has he been inconsistent as a stolen base guy, but he's further hurt that the Cardinals are not really a base running team per se. I would right now. I would lean Cain. But I do think it's curious because I wonder if Kane's going to end up being a Royal next year. And if he's not a Royal, he's probably going to go to a better home run park. But he's also likely to go to a team that's not going to be as friendly for his base running. So I think there could be a significant amount of variance in what statistics you can expect from him next year. I would give the nudge to Kane, but not by much. And I wouldn't be happy about taking Cain over Fowler because I think Fowler is going to age pretty well, and we're seeing some pretty good signs now. So there you go.
Goes quiet when Chuck is done talking, doesn't it? Just goes pure quiet. It's peaceful. All right, guys. Our next topic of discussion is going to be a couple players that we personally have different opinions on in the rest of the fantasy community. And I know that Aaron Judge has had a fantastic season to this point. There's barely any negatives that you can bring up. But, Chuck, what are your thoughts on him going into next season exactly that makes you different than the rest of the fantasy community?
Well, I think I've been less willing to pump the brakes on Aaron Judge than everyone else, meaning that I see so many things that I like. I love the walk rate. I love the power to all fields. I love the fact that he's hitting, a lot of ground balls through the right side of the infield, to beat the shift. And I also think I'm really putting a lot of stock in the fact that he made a large jump forward this year. And with his age being around 24, I think you could make a pretty good argument that he could take some further steps forward. Now, he's in one of the rare mini slumps that he's had right now, in so much as, he's been striking out a little bit more. And although he hasn't completely slowed down or he hasn't per se hurt you, he's not really at the peak where he was at a couple weeks ago when he was hitting a home run seemingly every day. But I like him more than most fantasy pundits. And on top of it, I still think that someone is going to value him more than me. So while I like him as a top 20 player right now going into next year, I think we're going to see him go somewhere in the pick number 10 range for next year, which a lot of people seem to think is quite laughable. Can you, Evan, can you see the possibility of Aaron Judge being a top 10 pick next year?
So top 10 as in 10? Yes. I mean, we're talking about a 12-team league, I'm assuming. Or are you talking 15? The reason I ask is this point, and it was kind of the Trey Turner thing that happened this year, where you get and you're in that end of the first round and you're thinking like, man, I really want Trey Turner. And if I want him, I should just kind of grab him right now because, you know, the guy in front of me has the wheel pick. And if he wants Turner, he knows he's definitely not, you know, fallen and he's just going to snag him up. So if I want him that badly, why wouldn't I just grab him now as opposed to bet that he's going to come back to me as opposed to what ADP or, you know, even like pre-draft rankings might suggest that it might. So I think you will see him pushed up closer towards that, the wheel of whatever, if you want to use 12 teams as kind of a quote unquote standard league, which is kind of how I think of it. At least I do think you will see him in the top 10. Ben, do you agree with that point, or is that just kind of me grasping at straws?
No, I agree with what you're saying. I think that in a larger format, there's going to be someone who's going to be like, I want Aaron Judge on my team, and the only chance I get him is if I take him at this spot. So I do understand exactly what you're saying. I personally wouldn't do it. I think that there will be strikeout worries to worry about down the road, and I think that right now we don't have to worry about him, which is great, but I think that they will come at some point this season. And it's the same thing that we see with all young players. I want to see what adjustments they make as the season goes on when pitchers start to pick up on stuff. And sometimes pitchers aren't able to pick up on stuff, and you have a player like Aaron Judge who could go the entire season without having a lot of flaws. But I just don't see that he's going to make it through the entire season without having some adversity. And I want to see how he makes the adjustments. Me personally, if he does make them, I could see him as a potential 15 to 20 pick. But it's still tough to put him in the top 10 just based on how many other really, really good players there are. And given what the pitching situation has been this year, what's to say that some of the top-tier pitchers, Sale, Scherzer, Kershaw, you know, players that you can rely on, aren't taken a little bit higher going into next year because the unreliability of pitchers. It could end up pushing Aaron Judge down as a result. So there's a lot of factors that can make things change.
I want to mention one more thing. I think we're going to hear a lot in trade talks this year and in pre-draft discussion next year on how to react to this power surge. You know, it's interesting to me that people say, well, you know, if he hits 45 home runs, you know, that's not that big a deal in this power environment. But if everyone's hitting for power, then you have to get power too. It's not one of those things where you're like, okay, well, you know, since everybody is hitting for power, you know, are you trying to keep up with people by getting even more power than they're drafting? Because if you are, then a guy like Aaron Judge is a guy, you know, a guy like Giancarlo Stanton, if everything falls right, those guys can give you an advantage in a category where, you know, most everybody's coming up with, you know, a decent amount of power. Or do you want to look at it like, well, I don't really have to draft for power because, you know, all these guys that I'm picking at the end of the draft could be the surprising power surge guys for this year, you know, that was the year 2017. So I think there's something interesting going on there as well. Do you think that there's going to be a cognizant reaction to how to handle power as a category next year, Evan? Do you see that as well?
I find it funny because as I'm sitting you listening, you know, listening to you say this, I think about a couple of years ago where pitching was so plentiful, and I believe we kind of had the same argument, right? Where, you know, there's so much pitching, you can find pitching everywhere. Well, in that scenario, don't you need some aces to kind of separate you from the pack? And I heard just echoes of that in what you were saying, and I do think there is going to be a cognizant shift, as you so eloquently put it. Ben?
I do see a shift coming, and while you took that away from what Chuck was saying, I took another thing away, and this has been discussed in our Friends with Fantasy Benefits staff chat, that Aaron Judge is seemingly becoming the player that we expected Giancarlo Stanton to become prior to the injuries. And it appears that he is becoming that type of player. And he's going to have more steal upside, I think, and potentially even higher batting average consistency, considering how bad Stanton's average has been over the last few seasons. But I think the power output is basically the same type of thing. And we always expected Stanton to be a top-tier pick, and that was before we had other players with so much power, and Judge seemingly has a ton more power than a lot of other players. So I do think that there's going to be a shift coming, just like you were saying, and I do think that someone in your fantasy leagues is going to overvalue that power to some capacity and end up taking him potentially a little higher. Even if he does deserve it, I think that it's still probably a little bit early, and that's why I haven't pegged around 18 to 20 rather than closer to 10.
Yeah, the other thing that we kind of joked about off air, but it does kind of lend itself to this talking point, is there's always going to be that Yankees fan. Like, it's a stereotypical thing to say, and I hate to say it, but it's kind of true, isn't it? That there's always going to be that guy at the table. And so I think there's just a number of variables that are going to end up pushing Judge up the boards.
I wonder if do we think that the stolen bases that Judge has shown so far is an actual thing that's going to extend itself outward? He's a pretty big guy to be stealing, you know, 5 bases every 2 months. And I wonder if he sort of took people by surprise in the running to this point. And bigger players have a tendency that bigger players that aren't named Paul Goldschmidt have a tendency to turn to slow down relatively early in their careers. I mean, we were just talking about Mark Reynolds. He stole a lot when he was very young, and that certainly didn't keep up for any length of time at all. So I do think, I personally, in the spots where I end up drafting him next year, I'm not going to be counting on him for more than a handful of stolen bases.
I still think that he's capable of stealing like 10 to 14 bags for the course of the season, which is still pretty good considering that you'll have other power hitters like Stanton that really won't give you a ton of stolen bases. You know, a JD Martinez isn't going to give you a ton of stolen bases. So to have Aaron Judge be able to even give you close to potential double digits is, it's very helpful considering, especially if he does have 40 home run upside, because there's not a lot of players in the league who have 40 home run upside, let alone have 10 steal upside in his body. So why don't we move into Evan's player, and that's going to be Brett Gardner. So Evan, why don't you talk a little bit about Brett Gardner?
My boyfriend, Brett Gardner. Well, I was looking at his player rater stuff, trying to see if I still had a leg to stand on the Brett Gardner as a top 30 outfielder. He's currently number 19, but he has definitely tailed off. And I'm surprised you didn't throw Aaron Hicks, since we were talking about Aaron Hicks being my boy. I don't know that we can really expect the stolen bases to keep up for Gardner. I don't know if you guys want to play the over-under game, or if you think the power is the more interesting point in Brett Gardner. Ben, what is the most important thing for you with Brett Gardner, other than his name being Brett?
Well, I think the fact that he's able to contribute in multi-categories is very helpful, considering what the overall landscape of outfield will give you. You typically don't get many potential 5-category players that you can get after pick 200. And while his average is probably the worst asset that he's provided this year, I think that he's still doing reasonably well, hitting .266. He's got 47 runs, 13 home runs, which is pretty good considering, 31 RBIs and 8 stolen bases. I think basically if you keep looking at those numbers, you'll see someone who's around 15-plus stolen bases for the season, 20 to 25 home runs for the year, close to 90 RBIs, if not more, and 90 or so runs and 60 to 70 RBIs. That's a very good fantasy player. And even if he hits .266, we know that he has the capability of having a better batting average. So you could see that improve as the season goes on still. So it wouldn't be completely surprising if you see Brett Gardner potentially sneak close to the top 10 in overall outfielders. This is where you go to Chuck.
That's right. And Chuck is going to say that I don't really see I don't see a lot of excitement around him. I think, you know, unless he has one more big surge, if his numbers stay around league average, I think people between the age and between his history of sort of underperforming for the few years before this year, I think you're going to see him be a guy who sort of fills in outfields later in the draft, and people are going to be like, well, you know, just sort of drafting him not to hurt you anywhere. And, you know, 13 home runs, while that seems to be a bit of a surge for Brett Gardner, is not really going to be the kind of home run total that really moves the needle for a lot of guys, considering that I still suspect that he'll probably fall short of 20 home runs this year, like he normally does. So, you know, I think it was a very good call, and it was very good timing in the call by Evan to say that he was going to be a top 30 outfielder this year, because I think he's got such a leg up that he probably is going to finish at least, you know, right around 30, if not quite a bit better. And so, you know, kudos to him on that. But I don't think with him aging towards his middle 30s, I don't think you're going to see people get too excited about drafting him next year.
Well, yeah, because he's going to be 34. So if you wanted to talk real quick about the name that I thought you were going to bring up, is everybody's new boyfriend, Aaron Hicks, who is going through some Achilles stuff right now. But he's been phenomenal. He's actually right behind Brett Gardner on the Player Rater at number 20 of what I'm looking at. I was telling you guys about a piece I had done going into last year that had suggested if you took Aaron Hicks out of the AL Central that he was going to fare better as far as his batting average numbers were concerned. But I don't think anybody expected this. So, Ben, obviously Aaron Hicks is the guy that you want next year in the draft, but how crazy different is it for you?
I would say that if he continues to solidify a role, that's going to be a pretty significant difference, because if he's solidifying a role, that means he's contributing in all the same categories that he is to this point in the season. And it's been a very balanced fantasy player. He's more helpful in a roto than a head-to-head type of format, just given the fact of how much he contributes in overall categories. But I think that even in a head-to-head format, he's still going to be able to help you, because he's not going to really hurt you in any categories. And I think that that's the big benefit to what Aaron Hicks' improvements have been. We've seen the capabilities that he has had when he was in Minnesota, and even at parts of last year, we saw that he had potential, but it's good to see him be able to put everything together this year. What about you, Chuck? What are your thoughts on Aaron Hicks?
Well, I see sort of a progression. I'm going to make a parallel to another former Yankee, and I see sort of a parallel to Melky Cabrera, in so much as people thought a lot of really good things about him when he first came up with the Twins, and he struggled so much that he ended up, you know, sort of getting in a change of scenery trade. And now he appears to be coming on. It's in sort of a level all across the board kind of a way, not in, you know, a big overload of any one statistical category, which I also, you know, can make an analogy to Melky Cabrera on. So I think you're going to look at, you know, probably a 4 or 5 year window here where he's going to have decent value again as a guy who can fill in your outfield for you. And you can hope that that he surges a little bit and maybe he turns into a post-hype sleeper and he is actually as good as people hoped he was going to be early on in his career. But I think you're going to see more of a leveling off. I don't think you're going to see any huge spikes going forward would be, you know, my general guess, as you can see by me making a Melky Cabrera analogy. Melky had some pretty good years, but I don't think he's a guy who ever carried a fantasy team, and I don't think Hicks is going to get to those heights either.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, are you expecting the PED suspension as well? And also, I forget where I saw this, but over the past like 3 years, he's been a top 30 like roto outfielder or something stupid like that. Like, he's actually been a productive member of society.
Yeah, I think he's been relatively productive in a fairly unexciting way. Meaning, again, I don't think people, you know, draft him expecting that he's going to be somebody who really carries your
team. No.
More of a fourth or fifth outfielder type.
Roster glue.
But, I mean, a good amount of it. In this case, because Hicks is young, you know, relatively young in his career, you know, but not maybe as young as you'd think, I think, you know, you can draft him as roster glue with the hope that maybe there's a little extra upside. But I don't really see that upside coming to fruition. He is in the right team, but at the same time, I do worry that, you know, if Ellsbury's playing good or if they acquire anybody, you know, I do think that there could be a bit of a roster crunch too, as far as, you know, he's regularly been sort of a platoon player now for the last couple years, and we can hope that he doesn't fall back into that. So that will be some of the danger that we're speaking of. So there we go. That's my thoughts on Aaron Hicks.
I always like your thoughts, Chuck. They're always very methodical.
I just pictured you at the end being like Forrest Gump, and that's all I have to say about that.
I can see that, too. why don't we go real quick into the player who I differ on and potentially a lot of other players in the fantasy community, and that's going to be Dan Straley. I know that we had talked about him a little bit off the air, but what are your guys' thoughts on Dan Straley exactly? And we'll start with Chuck. Where do you perceive Dan Straley going forward?
I perceive Dan Straley to be a guy that's going to get drafted next year towards the end of people's rotations, and the person who drafts him is going to be able to look at, you know, two relatively strong years worth of numbers going into next year. At the same time, he's somebody who doesn't offer real huge upside, and a lot of pundits and a lot of analysts will say that he's gotten by with a lot of smoke and mirrors. You know, the allure to him this year was that he, you know, had performed pretty well in Cincinnati last year. Now this year he moves to the bigger park, and he's had some really good stretches this year as well. But he's not going to qualify as the shiny new bobble, to paraphrase a coin for these young studs that are coming up that you think could really make enormous leaps. He's surprisingly effective, but there's a number of pitchers like this. When you draft somebody who doesn't really have top 15 upside, you have to remember that that you're still taking on risk, because all pitchers are, you know, have an uncertainty factor, and you're not really getting the huge upside potential, which I think can be a really dangerous way to draft at times. And I'm going to make this comparison. Like, everybody that was excited about drafting Tanner Roark this year, you know, he had been surprisingly effective, but you knew that he didn't have huge upside. Jose Quintana is another one who was a little further up the scale. Like, it's fine to get him if you're getting him at a decent price, but if you think you want to jump the gun far ahead of his ADP to make sure that you get him, I think you'll be making a dramatic mistake. So that's where I am on Dan Straley moving forward.
And what are your thoughts, Evan?
I mean, we've kind of touched on Dan Straley like a month ago, and I thought that was kind of going to be the last time that we had to worry about it. The Marlins don't really have a ton in the rotation. Like, if David Phelps was doing anything, he could probably push Straley, and Straley probably would be a pretty good bullpen piece, considering that he's really excelled the first time through the lineup. He's kind of tailed off in his flipping lineups this year, but it's not something I'm really worried about long term, just kind of an interesting go along tidbit. Straley's kind of roster glue, if we kind of want to continue that analogy, and nobody that I would even bet on, what, a top 70 pitcher next year at the draft table? Top 60? What are you thinking, Ben? Like, how wrong, or not wrong, how different are you than the pack?
Well, I guess I view it differently, because I see him as a decent K guy, and if you're looking side by side with his numbers to Lance Lynn's numbers, who I would say that people probably would say Lance Lynn is probably a top 40 pitcher. Would you agree with that or no?
Either I way. Would, but I'm a Lynn guy. But I would.
I would not. That number seems quite elevated to me. I guess I'm going off the fact that Lance Lynn, you know, was coming off injuries, etc. And so I thought of him as a sleeper pitcher this year. But I know that he wasn't taken anywhere as close to the top 40 this year. Lynn wasn't. So,
well, he wasn't drafted in the ESPN Standard Leagues. But right now, these guys are both pitching very well. They're both basically at 78 innings, but they have a very similar whip, 1.13 for Straley, 1.16 for Lynn. The ERA is in favor of Lynn, 3.33 compared to 3.58. But Lynn doesn't have exactly one strikeout per inning, and Straley has just slightly more than one strikeout per inning. Now, I would say that the Cardinals are a better team overall than the Marlins, but if you're playing in a quality starts league, then it doesn't necessarily matter. But they're both 5-4 on the season. Lynn has one more quality starts than Straley. I think that Straley has been making improvements over the, not only this season, but even from partially last season, that I could see him being able to take another step forward. And I think that he has the capability of being a potential top 40 starter because of that, which is significantly different than what you were thinking, Evan, especially if you're a Lynn guy because of how similar their stats are.
Yeah, well, Straley struck out 14 Padres in a 7-inning bout, and while you can't take that away from him, that may have something to do with the strikeout differences that you were highlighting. Lynn has had a home run issue this year. I mean, as have a lot of pitchers, but it's kind of been a little more noticeable. And I think it's a interesting point that you bring up, and like I said, my bias, which has already been previously noted, is probably coming into play here.
Yeah, I mean, and we've seen that type of stuff happen, and obviously it's not the easiest thing because he's only had 3 seasons total in his entire career that he's gone and actually made, or I should say, sorry, he's only had 3 seasons in his entire career in which he's had more than 14 starts. And what we saw last year, it wasn't terrible because he had a 1.19 whip last year, 3.76 ERA. He had 162 innings and 162 strikeouts through 191 innings. So that wasn't great, but this year he's basically staying on pace. I think that he has the capabilities of making improvements to become a better strikeout pitcher. And I think if he's able to at least get close to a strikeout per inning, or at least get 8 Ks per 9, or even 7.5, I think the rest of his numbers, the ratios that he's bringing to the table, I think that we'll see a good player that you're able to have, like you said, as a glue guy, but more of a mid-tier to decent starter that you probably weren't expecting to get, that you probably could get outside of pick 175 to 2, or even potentially top 200.
I definitely think that your perception of these guys is vaulted, which is decent, because if you're going to have a difference of opinion, it helps a lot if that difference of opinion is at a point in the draft where everyone's going to be sort of drafting what their gut instinct is for pitchers anyway. So I think it's likely that you'll be able to get Dan Straley in most, if not all, of your leagues next year, because I personally, he struggled enough with strikeouts in other stops during his career, and he's floated around enough in his career that he's somebody that I'm not going to count on the strikeouts moving forward, but you can take him at a spot where you don't necessarily, as long as he stays relatively effective and takes the turn, you know, takes his turn every 5 days, I think you have, you know, you're going to get a medium amount of value around the spots where everyone else is, you know, taking similar style pitchers. So, you know, and he definitely gets the addition of, you know, having signed that bigger contract for him in Miami, and that park is going to shelter him a little bit. And actually, I like their outfield defense, and when Wenatchi Varea is playing well, I like their infield defense pretty well too. So, you know, he's got some shelter around him. You're convincing me that I'm probably a little bit too negative on him, but I don't think you can get me as positive on him as you are. Let's put it that way.
And that's fine. I think the fact that he was able to get 31 starts last year and 34 games played, I think that was significant for his development, because it showed that he has the capability of being able to make it through a full season. And there have been some injury issues in his career, so I think it's good. He's made 14 starts this year, which is good for this point in the season, because it puts him on pace to go more than 30. And I think, like I said, his ratios the last 2 years have been pretty good. If he's able to keep that up with a decent K rate, I think you'll have someone that you can at least consider relying on, considering how many other pitchers have not been reliable this year in fantasy.
Do you think he gets flipped?
I don't think he gets flipped. It would be a Marlins thing to do to flip him, especially how bad their system is. But he's only 28, so I don't know if it's necessarily the smartest move for them to go and flip him, because you could still get him for a few more decent years in which the Marlins may be able to compete by the time that he's in his 30s. So I almost don't know if it makes sense for them to go and flip him at 28 years old.
Chuck, I mean, he's been a guy that's been, you know, changing teams, you know, every year for the past 3 or 4 years. Do you think there's another move in his future here?
I really do not think he gets moved. I think they've had so much trouble with pitching depth there. You know, obviously the boating habits of their ace last year definitely added to the woes that we're speaking of now. But I don't think they have enough pitching to move them, and I think they've sort of backed themselves into a corner as far as, you know, they're paying so much money to Stanton, et cetera. I think they have intentions of competing every year, and I don't see how they could move what is their de facto best pitcher and keep up that sort of mirage that they like to keep up. So, you know, I mean, I know Volquez was their opening day starter, et cetera. So maybe Volquez is considered their ace or their number one. But I think I would rather have Straley. And I think I don't see him moving Straley. I think Straley is probably set for at least the next couple of years, or until the new ownership takeover. Maybe they would be more into wheeling and dealing than I foresee the Marlins being here in the near future.
All right. Well, Chuck, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
Well, I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter, of course. I can also, be reached through all of the forums from FWFB, including, you know, there's a feedback chance on all of my weekly articles, which is called Of Note. Last week, basically, we were getting a lot of material on the site about the draft from our good friend, Matt Carpenter, or Matt Thompson, excuse me. And so it would have been really cool to have Matt Carpenter.
Do you think Matt Carpenter would be a guest on our show? I think we could pull it off.
That would be awesome.
Maybe we should get Mike Matheny, too.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't make Matt Thompson necessarily happy. But my point being is that I did not put out an Of Note article last week between, the stuff that caused this show not to happen and the fallout thereafter. But this week I'm trying to put out two articles for you guys. So feel free to, look for me on Twitter, because I'll be posting when the articles come out. And then feel free to nail me with feedback, negative or positive.
And what about you, Evan?
I can be reached at FWFB on the Twitter machine. I'm doing this podcast. Justin said he was putting together podcast teams for football, Ben, and I don't know about you, but I tapped Justin and said, if you want to put the two best friends together, that would probably be the best thing for the audio goal for the fans. So we'll see how that comes. We just did our first run of rankings. I only did 25 at each position because I'm lazy. Ben, how many did you do?
80.
Because Ben is an overachiever. So I'm sure there will be plenty more side conversations from me and Ben. And I can't wait to have those. But also not losing track of the baseball season. So it's going to be a fun and busy time for everybody involved.
Busy, busy, busy. And I can be reached at bbrentis FWFB. As Evan was saying, I am also getting ready for football season. Took care of some of the rankings. Looking forward to doing a top 250 and an IDP for that. I'm looking forward to baseball season as it gets closer to the All-Star break, and I'd like to see what happens at the trade deadline. I think that it will be very interesting to see what happens to certain players this year, like what may happen to Johnny Cueto and other players on the Kansas City Royals, what they do. There's a couple of teams that I think have question marks and could make big moves, and it's just going to get more and more interesting as the season goes on. But from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone. Every night.